everyone. This is the Axelon Archives. I'm Daoud.
I'm James.
And so what this is going to do is we're going to go over the Beast Wars entire series. We're going to start off with Beast Wars Part 1, Episode 1, Season 1. So just a little bit of background history on us and our involvement with Beast Wars. James and I don't actually know each other that well. We had some interactions over Twitter, but we really got together because of mainly two people, Jake Mason and Matt Hoadley. Jake Mason and his friend Josh Nichols, sorry, blanked on his last name for a second. They have a family of podcasts, which they are ever growing, which inspired Matt Hoadley to create his own podcast called Fifth Draw Wild, and they did a podcast about podcasting, which finally gave me the kick in the pants to make my own podcast, which I've been wanting to do for a few years. I put a list of about 5 topics on the Jake and Josh Discord, and James here responded to the Beast Wars one.
Yep.
Anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I've also wanted to do a podcast for a while, but like didn't really have a subject, and as I'm sometimes bad at asking people. So when I saw you were looking at it, I was like, hey, I can talk about Beast Wars. I have a lot to say about that show.
Yeah, I know when I was going to guest on Fifth Draw Wild, out of the 5 topics, which is the same one they showed you, that I wanted to talk about, Matt said, like, well, I'm planning to do a Stargate rewatch podcast in a few years. I don't want to step on your toes. I'm like, okay. And then as I was guessing, I'm like, maybe I can just do that with him. I haven't told him that, though. Yeah, I haven't told that him though. So our involvement with Beast Wars, since I gave the story of how we met, James, you want to go first with your involvement with Beast Wars?
Okay. I believe I know I'm older than you. So I grew up watching the original Gen 1 as a kid. And then it just, you know, after a while, it disappeared. And in the time before the internet, you couldn't really find out what happened to shows. This is like you'd catch them when they were on, and then they, you know, disappeared. The toys stopped disappearing. There was Gen 2 for a bit. It was Rival, but it didn't really have a show except for a weird repackaging of the original show, similar to the revisioning of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Distracting. So it wasn't until in the early 90s, I guess 96, somewhere there, started seeing stuff about Beast Wars, and it was a new show in CG animation, which was still pretty novel at the time. This show was released in 1996, which is the year after Toy Story, and while it's not the first CGI animated show, I think the first one I was reading was a show called Insectors, and of course, Mainframe's own reboot came before this.
Sorry to interrupt you. As far as I know, Reboot actually was the first full CGI television series that ever. I guess we have complete information.
I saw something mentioning about another show that I think was called Insectors, but I didn't have time to look it up. But like, obviously, Reboot's the one everybody remembers. Sorry, any Insectors fans. Assuming that's the title. So yeah, I started watching that and. Got some of the toys. My brother got on the toys and got into it. And that really got me back into Transformers fandom. Like, I weirdly attended I was never much into the online fandom, but, like, it eventually led me into getting into the comics, and I've been kind of actively following Transformers for the most part ever since. So, how did you come to Beast Wars, given the fact you were not like not as young of a child. You were a much younger child in the year 1996.
Yes. So 1996 was the year I started kindergarten. Everyone listening to this, you're old. in fact, when we recorded a pilot for this, because I'm the one editing this, just so I have some audio to practice with. I think for the first attempt, it was decent. And during our pilot recording, listeners, I actually made James just freak out because I asked him what's a VHS. I was messing with him, but he totally believed me.
More terrifying than more terrifying than the time I was talking to a friend who had no idea what the N64 was. Or Reboot, which brings it around full circle.
Reboot, you can say, just maybe didn't grow up with cable. Because I believe it was on Cartoon Network.
Reboot has a very weird broadcast. That's something that's way too much in depth to go into, but like Reboot has a very long and complicated broadcast history.
Hmm.
Involving several cancellations.
So, yeah, my I remember finding a VHS of the first three or four episodes of Beast Wars at the library. This was years later. And so it had the original air dates. And then I realized, oh, this was in 1996 in September. Yeah, September 16th, 1996, from what our show notes say. So I would have just started or about to start kindergarten. I was 4 years old when this show premiered. I remember vividly because I was a four-year-old. I did not think anything about the level of CGI. I don't think anyone would have in 1996, just because this. I mean, as far as the actual characters go, this is decent quality.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my introduction to the Transformers at all. So all the Easter eggs and background they had for G1 is not really something I understood. In fact, I didn't. Well, this is kind of spoilers for a 20-year-old show. When the Vox masquerade as Unicron, I had no idea who Unicron was. And it's part of the opening credits from season 2 onward, right? Or season 3?
Yeah.
Season 2 onward. I just, okay, it's a giant golden talking head, okay? That's weird. Why is he gold? Because I don't think he's gold in the actual thing, is he?
He has a lot of gold. I think it might have just been a Vox thing. I don't know. We'll figure that mystery out as we get to it.
All right, yeah. I remember Beast Wars being on Netflix. Can you suggest, besides buying the DVDs anyway, or this might be able to watch it with us if they want?
Yeah, it was on Netflix, but unfortunately, is it on there? I don't know. I don't know. I should have checked this before. And I honestly don't know if it's anything on. We'll try to get back to you, because surely there's got to be a way to watch this show. There are a couple of collections. I was watching the old Rhinomation one, which is filled with some delightful fully CGI animated menus. Remember when DVDs had that all the time?
Mm. Yeah, my first DVDs were Rush Hour 2 and The Mummy Returns. So,
I can't remember what my very first I can remember my first anime DVD, but I don't remember my first DVD period.
Well, I can grab my first anime DVD. It's right over there. It's Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle.
Yeah. Mine was Disc 2 and 3 of Outlaw Star, but that's not here near. So I guess now that we talked about our history, like, I got a little like background history of like where the heck did Beast Wars come from?
Well, hold on, before we move on, just one quick little sidebar. Outlaw Star actually was recently re-released to the entire full series. There is both the regular full series and the collector's edition. I happen to work at a certain major big box electronics store, so that's why I know. It's why I had it in my cart.
Nice. So,
if any Outlaw Star fans out there want to check that out.
Yeah, we can do an Outlaw Star rewatch podcast later. So anyway, so Beast Wars. There isn't too much information about it, but basically, so in the early 90s, Hasbro had bought Kenner, which is a longtime rival. They had the Star Wars toy license originally. So they consolidated a bunch of their boys' toy lines into their headquarters in Rhode Island. Oh, sorry, they transferred it from Hasbro's headquarters in Rhode Island to Kenner's Cincinnati, Ohio. And Kenner was asked to revitalize a lot of their brands, which is what they did. So apparently, lead designer Chris Gross kicked off Beast Wars when he gave the idea for from the Blocky Robots to Guyver-inspired organic machines. If you've ever seen some of the early Beast Wars toys where they have like the weird organic faces on them, apparently that's a leftover part of that.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, and Beast Wars kind of just came off as some of the inspired by some of Kenner's past lines, like Future War.
Huh.
And so, yeah, and so they went with that since at the time Transformers was pretty much dead. Generation 2 failed to revive the series, so they wanted a fresh take. So, yeah, everyone was monkeys, not trucks.
I don't understand why anyone thought Generation 2 would revive the series if you don't have the... I don't understand. Okay, so I grew up in the late 90s, early 2000s. If you have a toy line that is supposed to be your main vector of infection, let's call it, is a children's TV show, you need to have that TV show be popular to actually hold it up. Generation 2 was literally just Generation 1 rerun with some graphics.
Yeah. And a lot of the first line were reissues, which I guess is part of the reason. But then they started making original figures. It seems like there should have been something in the cards, but who knows? That I did not research or know off the top of my head. There was a comic book, but that was a continuation of the Marvel comic, but again, a bit outside that scope. So, yeah. So apparently, Hasbro went with Mainframe because they were impressed with their reboot show. So Mainframe does pretty much all the animation, and they hired on two guys to do the story editing, Bob Ford and Larry DiTillo, who, between the two of them, I think they've wrote most of the episodes. I know Bob Ford wrote the episode we're going to be watching and wrote 20 out of the 52 episodes of the show.
And there was at least one episode done by Christy Marks.
Yeah. Like, as far as it goes, it seems like they're credited as story editors, but they seem to be work more as like what we call showrunners, except they did more of like the direct work on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, which I like that. Like if you have something that's going to be short run, serialized as like, wait, am I correct using the right word there? It's serialized television. I like when you have one guiding force throughout the entire thing. It's one thing that helped Breaking Bad be better than Dexter because there was a lot of showrunners over the course of that television show.
Yeah. Grant, from the beginning, it's mostly episodic, as we'll probably see, but it definitely gets serial later on, and particularly in the later seasons. But enough background. Let's dive into the show, into the episode.
Do we want to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming, or do you want to wait till next episode?
Oh, we can talk about the next episode.
Okay, yeah. Talk about why that meeting. I teased James with, a topic that will really get some mileage out of. I guess we'll wait for that next episode too.
Mm-hmm. we spent enough time talking about our history and the history of the show. So let's get to the Rat Trap Rap.
No, it's the Rhinox Rundown.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Cut that part out.
I had the Rhinox Rundown too, so yeah. Okay,
The Rhinox Rundown.
What's new, Pussycat?
Rhinox, what's going on?
So, yeah, let's do a basic rundown of the episode before we get into the nitty-gritty.
All right, so my basic rundown, now this is from... I tried to exclude any background knowledge you wouldn't have if you didn't watch G1. So we see two ships come out of what looks like a puddle in space shooting at each other. Dim lighting within the ships, interior shots, so we don't see the robot modes because they didn't have toys of those, so I sell them.
Yeah, and it was expensive to create another set of models that were not going to be used. I believe we do get a clear view of one character, Megatron, and I was reading that his form is based on like the super robot from Reboot.
Yeah,
but it's in shadow, so you can't tell.
And I saw a YouTube video a while ago that it's untransformable. That version, yeah. Of him. Yeah. All right. So one ship launches its crew into orbit as they fall. Yeah. They're both, because they're shooting at each other. The one's about to they're about to crash onto the planet below.
We find out they are the Maximals and the Predacons, and the Maximals are a bit outgunned because they are only a research vessel, while the Predacons are hardened criminals.
In the words of Ratchet, we're an exploration ship. We're not designed for deep space combat. Yeah. So both crash, and we find out there's a lot of energon on this planet. so much that they'll shut down and explode for more than a few minutes. So both sides need to adopt alternate forms, new alternate forms. So we meet our characters for the next few years, some sticking around longer than others. We have the Predacons, who are Megatron, a purple T-Rex, Scorponok, a gray scorpion, who later who becomes the second in command with the expulsion of Dinobot. Pterosaur, who is a red pterosaur. Who'd guessed? Waspinator, who is a green wasp. Is he a wasp?
Yeah, he's a wasp.
Okay, like he does. He looks like some kind of combination.
Look like a wasp, particularly like his the model they put like a bunch of teeth in. Like that's not how wasps work. But whatever, that was probably easier to animate.
Also, I don't think wasps are green. Yeah, but you got to differentiate them by color to help. So help the toys look different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to get that, we have Nexus Tarantulas, who's supposed to be theoretically is a tarantula, but like he doesn't look like any tarantula I've ever seen. He's mostly purple and has design on the back.
I think he's just supposed to be a spider.
Yeah, he is like if someone asks you to draw a spider without any reference, he's in like and not a black widow. He's what you'd be.
Yeah. So then we have the Maximals. Optimus. So right off the bat, the Maximals are outnumbered 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
So Optimus Primal, Silver, who I believe is supposed to be a silverback gorilla. He's a gorilla, but specifically a silverback. Mm-hmm. Rhinox is a brown rhino with a mostly green color scheme in robot mode, which I never realized. I always think of him as green, but then you don't see any of that green when he's in beast mode. Rattrap, who's a giant, just gray rat. He's also kind of a rat.
Yeah, I know you didn't want to bring a jet one, but just as an aside, it's like they don't actually attempt to like make them look like the real. There's no like shrinking or growing. Like Rattrap is a giant rat. They don't have him like shrink down to be an actual rat.
Well, actually, that's the thing. So the Maximals and Predacons are okay. So their predecessors, the Autobots and the Decepticons, are car-sized robots. It was a creative decision to make them smaller, more energy-efficient models so you don't have a car-sized gorilla or a rat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have a literal VW bug.
Yeah, we won't find that out until much later. We're just presented as is. This is how they look.
Yeah, as far as we know, they're as big as them.
Yeah, anyways, we also have Cheetor, who is a cheetah and kid of the group.
Yeah. And then we have Dinobot, who is originally a Predacon.
Well, not just yet. Last we saw Dinobot, he was a Predacon trying to take over the Predacon trying to take over leader, challenging Megatron to a duel. Megatron not having any of that and has him blown away.
Yes, unlike G1 Megatron, Beast Era Megatron is no fool and does not tolerate fools. Well, for the most part, mm-hmm. He tolerates fools. He is no fool though.
Yeah, he has limited resources to work with.
That beggars can't be choosers. So, as James mentioned, Dinobot tries to take over because they stole. It's just called the Golden Disc. It's a relic of Cybertron. Later on, we'll find out this is actually one of the two golden records that was left with the Voyager 2 space probe, which actually. Okay, so. All right, across the timeline. This chronology doesn't match up. Transformers Generation 1, was it 84?
It was like 84.
Okay, 84. Voyager 2 was launched in 86.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Well, it ran through 87. So, I mean...
Yes, but the way they kind of talk about it is G1 Megatron put the message on the disc in the early part of the Great War.
It doesn't. I mean, like, we'll probably get to that when we get there. Wait, but like, it's a little weird if you stop to think about it. We don't even know that's what that's for right now. Because right now, it's just a golden disc, and it was they were.
And got that backwards.
Do they actually say Earth, or do they just say, "Oh, we're supposed to take us somewhere important"?
Dinobot does say this is not Earth.
Yeah, but there is a lot of Energon. Megatron says that's okay for now.
My bad. Okay, I got this totally wrong. Okay, so assuming it was Voyager 2, Voyager 2 was apparently launched in 1977.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he would have been in stasis when it was actually launched. Let me see. Were there any other Voyagers? Well, either way, like, he was, what, you think he went out in space, stopped it, put the message on the disc, and let it go?
Maybe.
I mean, it'll work, sure. Okay, I'll accept that. Yeah.
Not important. That doesn't happen for a while.
Literally not important. You're right.
That's also technically a spoiler, but.
Anyway. Two things we got to agree on, actually. Okay, so what spoiler policy and cursing policy?
I would say, for the most part, try to avoid, like, going into outright spoilers. Obviously, like, it's an old show, so I think. But, like, I would say, let's not talk about dinos. Let's try to avoid mentioning, like character deaths in advance. We can talk about, like, some, like, things, if it says, like, oh, this might be important. This is something that comes up later. But, like, we've both seen it. This is an older show. But, you know, some people listening to it might not have seen it. So we don't want to, like, necessarily give everything away up to it.
All right, fair enough.
So, yeah, we should probably like, limit, like, outright stuff. Particularly, like, maybe discouragements of, like, when did they get over the Voyager 2? There'll be plenty of time when that actually happens.
Okay. Yeah, we'll address it as it comes up. Agreed. And,
Yeah, and I guess, like, cursing policy.
I mean, Jake's policy is it's a kid's show, so there should... So usually he won't curse on those shows. I don't know. I recently learned how to bleep stuff, so I can now. Okay,
we'll see what happens when someone drops an F-bomb or something.
All right, yeah. All right, hey, whoever's the first guest, you're going to define our cursing policy. Find out.
All right.
So Dinobot comes up. He has the golden disc in hand. He's like, this isn't Earth. You idiot. You led us to the wrong planet. And it's like, so he tried to take over, and Megatron, being the just suave, evil Bond villain that he is, just sort of walks towards the ship and just says, hey, Scorponok, show him what we do with traitors. Scorponok just comes out of the shadows, does this clickety-clack with his claws, which is cool. And then fires a missile at him and launches him into the air. And then we get to meet the Maximals. The Cheetor sees a pair of cheetahs running really, really fast. And then he sort of goes out to meet them to show off / explore, we'll call it. And he sees a
rather large bug flying in the air.
Well, before that, I never realized this when I multiple viewings, but I did this time. The cheetahs react to him talking.
Yeah, they do kind of like a cartoon bug-eyed and run away.
Yeah, like they're just running along. Like when I first used to watch it, I thought, oh, maybe they're running away from something. And they do a cartoon bug-eyed when he starts talking. He's like, hey, what's up? I didn't realize cheetahs were smart enough to react to that.
Well, I mean, Cheetor's not smart enough to realize, like, cheetahs can't talk.
As far as you know, it's an unknown alien planet that could have been... They could have been the sentient life forms on this planet. So,
granted, it's kind of weird. Like, they kind of identify species by Earth name and don't say anything about that. It's a weird... This planet is weird, and some of it will make sense as it goes on, and some will be still kind of weird.
So they react to a rather large flying bug, and the detective skills on Cheeto are shown right off the bat. He's like, what? It's just a giant bug. Based on their reaction, however, it's no ordinary phenomenon.
It could be a robot in disguise. This is an actual line he says.
Some kind of unnatural phenomenon. And if we're talking about unnatural phenomenon, it's a robot in disguise.
And it is.
Which is when we learn about Waspinator. So Waspinator is one of three. Yeah, I think starts off as three. Three characters voiced by the same actor in the show, just off the bat. Mm-hmm. Waspinator, Dinobot, and Rattrap. They're all voiced by the same person. They are very different characters, which is why Scott McNeil is a freaking chameleon. Yeah. So, yeah. Go ahead.
If he also does Rat Trap along with his Brooklyn accent, which you might recognize if you're a Gundam Wing fan, is the same one he kind of does for Duo Maxwell.
Hmm. Oh, wait, we didn't mention that. So this is an entire Canadian cast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I believe it's actually recorded in Vancouver just based on the actors I know.
I believe so.
Yeah, they do. I think except for Iron Blooded Orphans, the studio has done every single adaptation of Gundam.
I can believe that.
Yeah. So here's how I remember it. I have it in my notes. They start fighting each other, and then both sides just show up.
Yeah, well, they start shooting. Max will see them in the rest of the Max will see Indifference, and so they had to go up. And the Predacons just show up. Presumably, they were tailing Waspinator. Megatron loves a good dramatic entrance.
Yeah,
and initially starts posturing. Optimus wants peace since they're on an abandoned planet. They have no idea doing like restarting the Great War. Capital letters on that. Is kind of a bad idea, but Megatron has none of that. Tells them that they've been biding their time and waiting to restart the ancient conflict. And eventually, Cheetor, who has his gun jammed, manages to unjam it and take a cheap shot at Megatron, officially kicking the Beast Wars into action.
Yeah, so the Beast Wars are all Cheetor's fault. He fired the first shot.
Yeah. I mean, Megatron would have done that anyways.
Yes.
He approves it. He says, treacherous unhanded sneak attack. Oh, ho, ho, I like you, pussycat. Yes.
Megatron is probably the best part of this entire franchise, not just Beast Wars.
Yeah.
So both sides show up, a firefight ensues, and then exposition, we're going to win. There's Energon here, we're going to wipe you all out.
Yeah, there's a lot of expositionary dialogue since this kind of works as a pilot. Mm-hmm. We kind of glazed over it when the Maximals go over the scene, they kind of just name themselves. Like she's just like, wow, I'm like a cheetah. And Fast and Cheetah is like, wait, Cheetor, and all of them just like coming up with names like that, which is raises a lot of questions. Like, did they have names before this?
Not important. I believe Optimus. He had that name. I think he might have stuck on Primal after he became a gorilla.
Yeah, Optimus and Megatron, as far as I know, don't change their names. I mean, granted, you don't see a scene of the Predacons. Presumably they had different names. Who knows? I was reading in an interview with Bob Ford. He says that Larry Dottillo and him actually did write down some pre-Beast Wars names, but they ended up discarding them because it got really too confusing. Because you'd have them use of one set of names and then immediately discard them for the other set of names. So
this is actually something was really interesting pointed out to me by a friend. The Cybertronians, they have such a long lifespan that they forget their own history that they were even around for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's why there's all these lost and forgotten parts of Cybertron.
Mm-hmm.
Normal how human society would work is, we weren't around for it, the records were lost, yada yada yada. They just forgot. They were around for it. They just don't know about it because their lifespans are so long. They don't remember everything.
Yeah, it's something they especially pay with in a lot of the IDW comics.
Mm.
But anyway, so yeah, they fight for a bit, and during it, Cheetah gets pinned down by some rocks. Optimus tries ordering a Rat Trap to go to it, and he basically tells Optimus to pound sand. He doesn't want to do it. So Optimus has to go and try to do it, but gets with his prime jets and gets blasted out of the sky, leaving Rhinox to forcibly get Rat Trap to lay down some covering fire to get them out of trouble. When suddenly the Energon feed kicks in and they're all forced to retreat, the Maximals kind of beaten since, again, they're not warriors, so they're not very good at this.
But why do they have weapons if they're not warriors?
The toys came with them.
Yeah. Also, I shouldn't really talk because Star Trek, every single ship has weapons. Yari asks, like, if these are for exploration, why do you have the ability to blow up a planet?
Yeah, Transformers Animated would kind of take a much more reasonable approach, but like a lot of the pre-production was like the toys were created far in advance, and the animators had to figure out how to adapt them into a show. One thing you'll notice in these early episodes, Rhinox never has a gun because Mainframe hadn't figured out how to transform his gun, which was a weird spinning saw blade thing with maces attached to it. It takes a while to figure out how to actually do that into something that gets represented on screen. So you have a lot of firefights where Rhinox stands around doing nothing because he doesn't actually have a gun.
I didn't even remember he had maces on it. I just remember it being a giant Gatling gun.
That's what he gets. That's not what the toy has.
Ah, okay. His transform, like I happened upon a trans metal version of Rhinox. Yeah. I think it was missing his weapon, but I think it was basically his horn from his beast mode. So he had a couple swords.
Yeah, Rhinox's toy like kind of seems to kind of suggest that he's a bit of a samurai. Like he kind of with some of the panels and some of the things. That's not really what his show character is. Like he is sometimes zen and meditative, but not a samurai.
He kind of plays
the Hank McCoy of like being this very intelligent bruiser.
Yeah, I'm suddenly wondering if his voice actor played Beast in X-Men Evolution or not.
I don't know. I forget his voice actor's name. I know he's a lot of time famous on the internet for voicing M. Bison in the Street Fighter animated cartoon, where he's cheesy as heck. But anyway, so they defeat, and the Maximals slink away, still kind of arguing over what they should do when they get to a bridge, and then we find Dinobot standing on it.
Oh, we've had to mention the Energon overload.
Well, the Energon overload is why the Predacons don't try to finish him off. They retreat. Mm. This will be a reoccurring comment of plot development, that they can't stand in beast form for too long because they will have Energon.
Robot mode.
Limit is left up to plot.
Robot mode.
Yeah. Yeah, the only time they can spin a road is left up to plot.
Yeah. I think it's honestly, besides plot, it's also, I'm assuming the beast modes are easier to animate.
Yeah, it was actually an interesting tidbit. And going into production, Bob Ward and Larry Tillo were told that the robots' faces were not going to animate in order to save money. So they actually, in a lot of the early episodes, they intentionally wrote a lot of beast segments to give the characters a chance to emote, since they were going to be ending the beast faces. And fortunately, they didn't end up doing that. But as an effect, a lot of the earlier episodes, they spent a lot of time in beast mode.
Yeah. So I looked it up. I'm sorry. I'm one of those people who always have to know. I can't just leave a question out there. He did not voice Hank McCoy, but I knew his voice actor's name is Richard Newman.
Richard Newman, that's right.
Yeah, which any My Little Pony fans out there, it's Cranky Doodle Donkey.
I can see him doing that.
Yeah.
So anyways, the Maximals were treated kind of a bit beaten up. Fortunately, they have internal repair systems, which is a thing that I don't think you really see after this. They usually go to like a kind of CR chamber.
Hmm. Well, the Optimus' line is it'll take time for beast modes to affect internal repairs, which I guess that means the beast modes are also like repairing their robot modes like as needed.
But, yeah, I don't remember that being an element in later things. So it might be one of those like things that only shows up in the pilot.
Yeah. Also, does that mean that if they need repairs and get back to base, do they need to stay in beast mode?
I don't know. I forget. Like, these episodes don't feature the CR chamber, which is something that will be used a lot. It's basically like a Transformer Bacta chamber. They get in there and it fixes them.
I was actually thinking of the I don't know what it's called, but it's in Dragon Ball Z. Basically, it's a health tank. It's a Bacta tank.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. Don't think it's influenced, because I think DBZ thing. But anyways, so yeah, they're heading back when suddenly they are confronted by the last member of the Predacons, Dinobot, who is demanding that they make him leader, that he is going to join the Maximals and lead them to victory as a way to stick it to Megatron.
He's a very his character is really not fleshed out as much as it will be in, as it is in the pilot.
Yeah.
He basically becomes the epitome of the word warrior in pretty much cross culturally. I think every culture's definition of warrior would fit him.
Yeah. Yeah. Rynax comments that this guy's got bearings of chrome steel, which is one of my favorite Transformer tropes. Is they'll say like an Earth colloquialism, but they'll like do something to make it robots.
You don't know they didn't originate it, and we just adapted it to us.
Yeah,
and we have the same humanoid shape.
I mean, to get some ridiculous in one, with you get stuff like it'd be like cyber ants over a picnic. It's just like just say ants. Doesn't have to be a robot.
Why are you having a picnic? You don't eat.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is all for Rhinox recap.
Yeah.
Rhinox rundown.
That's actually not where I remember that shit. That episode ending with Dinobot just challenging, but not actually getting into a fight yet.
Oh, the first and second episodes like blend in together so seamlessly. It's kind of hard to differentiate them.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to move on to the rat trap. Yeah, we'll talk this in more detail.
It's like I always say, we're all going to die. I know. Shut up, rat trap.
Shut up, rat trap. Okay.
All right, so yeah, you get so this is a very piloty, so you get a lot of like basic elements. You get like the Energon overloading, and they have to take beast forms. And if it's actually kind of funny, both the story editors, they intentionally didn't watch a lot of Gen 1. They were doing their own thing, but like in a weird way, they actually ended up kind of ripping off the original More Than Meets the Eye Transformer pilot, since it has a lot of things. It opens with a battle in space, them crashing onto an unknown planet and having to scan the local life forms. All things that do happen in the original Transformers pilot.
What was the purpose of the alternate forms in G1?
In G1, they assume that like the vehicles were the predominant life forms of America, of like the civilization.
Oh no, I get that, robots. But did they think they needed to hide?
Yeah, they wanted to blend in. Hence, robots in disguise.
I'm just saying. They don't know it's a carbon-based life, carbon-based dominated life forms.
Correct.
So, from what I saw of the G1 pilot, they're all knocked out. Teletran 1 eventually wakes up because of a volcanic explosion and starts, and this revives the closest robot to himself, which I believe is Starscream. Revives them. Okay, I get that Teletran 1 would do that, but sends out a probe looking for alternate forms. That's the part I don't get. For all they know, for all Teletran 1 knows, no time has passed. This could just be a Cybertronian colony by that point. So there would be no
reason. Crash on an alien word. I mean, like, it's organic and stuff.
Well, it doesn't know that.
It can. It's a computer. Look, we could nitpick the original show all day. Trust me on that. It's a show I love, but I will admit that there's a lot of dumb stuff in this. Yeah. Although interestingly, in order to find out that they accidentally kind of ripped off, they discovered the Alt Toys Transformers, which was a Transformers news group back in like the early days of the internet where you had news groups, which would cause them to be in contact with the fans. So there's actually a lot of good materials from the time of like fans actually talking with them and other stuff. Some scripts would get posted on there. It's weird. Like long before like social media was a thing, you had creators interacting with fans. Occasionally it would kind of backfire with that, but we'll see that in some of the later things. So yeah, we get most of the basic elements. A lot of like weird pilot elements, as mentioned. Like, Rattrap is extremely belligerent in these episodes, outright refusing to do orders. Like, he's always supposed to be kind of a coward, but, like, he's not never quite as just, like, straight up telling, like, Optimus to shove it.
Oh, okay, so I think that's more, this isn't said in the pilot, but it's said in the, like, extra media for the franchise. This is a skeleton crew, they're the skeleton crew. It's not a new ship. It is an absolutely completely new crew.
Yeah, and they mentioned that most of their thing are in stasis pods, which are going to be a deus ex machina we're going to see as they introduce more characters. Not a huge amount of characters compared to, like, Gen 1. I was reading that apparently with the budget, they were only able to have, like, 14 characters total, which is part of the reason why they crash out on the Monobaron planet, so they don't have to worry about a bunch of extra things to animate.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why Tigatron, to begin off, is out in nature a lot, so that they don't have to, like, write him in as much.
Yeah. It's also why there aren't a lot of, like, most of the landscapes are kind of barren in these first two episodes. It took them a while to render trees.
Oh, wait until they start rendering fire. That technology at that point was not able to.
Yeah.
They had to just superimpose fire.
Yeah. The animation, it mostly holds up. Like, a lot of the backgrounds are, like the finest technology of the Dreamcast. But, a lot of the more commonly used sets, like, I noticed that I paid attention to the ship interiors, and there's a lot of detail in them. There's a lot of it's kept in shadow, probably to kind of give themselves some flex room, but they do have a bunch of detail since these will be one things we're going to be seeing frequently throughout the show. See, we also get a lot of, like, catchphrases in the show. And in fact, in one exchange, we actually get three of ones we'll get. We're an exchange between Rhinox, Optimus, and we get Prime saying, "Well, that's just Prime," telling "Shut up, Rat Trap," and Rat Trap going, "We're all gonna die." Usually, you don't get them quite as fixed.
Does Cheever, like, have one?
I don't think he's got one. Okay. Might have like Cheever says a bunch of dumb stuff because he's the kid character, but. Okay.
Don't forget Megatron's catchphrase.
Yes.
Yes.
Also, going into animation, there's actually one scene when the Maximus get off where Rhinox is like working on a satellite, but he's in rhinoceros mode, which is weird because he doesn't have hands. I mean, there's actually an episode where that's a plot point where he loses access to rhinoceros. So it's weird to have him just like, oh yeah, just like fiddling with these flat feet. Like, Rhinox, you could have transformed and just did it if you needed to work on that. Yeah.
So do you think Dinobot trying to take over the Maximals was, in when it first aired at least, seen as a way to just balance out the numbers?
I mean, that's definitely the part. Since we start out from the beginning, we have six Predacons, four Maximals, that the Dinobot changing sides brings them to an even five. So, yeah, I think they definitely intended it. And it's actually kind of an interesting thing, since Dinobot has probably one of the better character arcs of thing, and it's something you hadn't really seen definitely in Transformers. I don't think a lot of shows where you have, like, the kind of, like, lawful bad guy who, like, joins the good guys and kind of aligns with them, but he's still kind of a jerk. And then Rat Trap and Dinobot's feud will be a pretty good driving force in the show.
I just realized that Scott McNeil arguing with himself over and over throughout the course of the show. Oh, that's gonna be fun to watch. As Toonami is, whenever it's on, whenever there's an LA dub, like a lot of 90s kids, I'll think back to, like, Digimon. There was actually an episode where if anyone out there knows Naruto, Neji and Rock Lee were fighting Kisame, and I just tweeted out, I just realized Gabumon is fighting against Davis and Koji right now.
I forget if there's a scene where you get, like, where you get Wasman or Dinobot and Rat Trap all with speaking parts in the same scene, since it'd be all three characters at once.
There are some actors who, if they're voicing multiple characters and they have those characters in one scene together, they'll just do the entire scene in one take.
Yeah.
Where other times, I think directors preferred that the actor just does one character at a time.
Yeah, that is, if I remember correctly, that's actually the case with Gary Chalk and David Kay, who do Optimus and Megatron respectively. They wanted to do multiple voices, but because they were the leaders, they were told they could only stick one voice. David Kagan would get to voice multiple characters in like some other Transformers series, and this one he's just Megatron.
In animated, he actually gets to be Optimus.
Yeah, that's a weird thing.
Yeah,
that's a good job.
Yeah, eventually David Kagan does actually move to LA because he starts getting so many voice acting roles down there. He just moves. Yeah, he has a rig to so he can record in his car. But as a safety feature, it only works when the car is not moving.
Oh yeah, I forgot a little bit of trivia. I was paying attention to the cast. I mentioned Bob Forward is the story editor working on all episodes. This episode is also directed by Ian Pearson, who is the co-founder of Mainframe, co-creator of Reboot. This is the only episode he directed, but he credited as an executive producer throughout all the show and Beast Machines. Also notable in the history of CG animation for animating the Dire Straits Money for Nothing video.
Okay.
No, it's one of the earliest examples of like CG animated characters in a video. I watched it before this. It's like super blocky, like Saturn era, like 3D. But like for something that came out in like, I think 85 or so, it's pretty impressive. Also a bit about the show. This show was actually pretty expensive for the time. I was looking up, and according to Bob Forward, the first season cost $18 million, which is $28 million today. Oh. For comparison, like that's $18 million for like 26 episodes of this first season. For comparison, Toy Story came out the year before and had a budget of $30
million. Which also did took like what, 4 years to make? Yeah. Whereas this took them probably two?
Yeah.
Maybe one.
Yeah. This show feels like it was put together quickly since a lot of the rules are kind of in flux. I get a lot of stuff that hasn't actually been finished yet.
Yeah. And this is a pilot. They don't know if they're going to series or not. So that's probably one major reason why the landscapes are not fully finished.
Yeah, this actually previewed in April 26 of 1996, but it didn't actually start regularly airing until the fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, anything to say about the characters? Since we didn't get a chance to go into them.
Yet? We definitely have a lot to say. It is interesting to see them in these early forms and see a lot of character traits that will carry over. How Optimus is like. Has kind of this weird kind of like he seems like comes off as a militant, but like also doesn't really want to fight a lot of the time. Like a lot of time he'll kind of go for peace, but like still he's also probably the most heavily armed of all the Maximals. He's got like wrist missiles, a jetpack, shoulder guns, swords.
Two things that you actually want to say about Optimus that actually pertain to. The real reason the Axelon was out in space, which to avoid spoilers, I'll be vague. Why would he launch that thing into space with the other pods? And B, why was he the only one that knew about it?
I think Rhinox knows, but I assume it was like security reasons. I think they do actually go into that.
Which actually, that might be why he was chosen as captain of the Axelon, because the reason, they're carrying this really, really dangerous thing. So that's probably why he's armed so well, just in case it gets out.
Yeah. So I think that's all we have for Beast Wars Part 1.
Mm. All right. So listen, this is where normally we'll go into messages from the Golden Disc, which is basically just our interactions with you guys. We obviously don't have any right now, except for there was someone who expressed interest in guesting. I forgot who it was. It was on the Discord. I think it was John. Yeah, it was John.
Check out that. Once we get a few episodes in the can and get used to it, we'd definitely be up for having some guests. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of Beast Wars Beast Wars fans. I'm sure we'll probably have people fighting over who wants to guest on Code of Hero, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah. All right. So I don't have an interstitial for messages from the Golden Disc. I don't think we need one, but
yeah.
Anyway, maybe just the sound effect of it spinning.
Yeah.
okay. So Messages from the Golden Disc would normally go here. So moving on to final thoughts. I don't really have much to say. You?
I think that's all. Like, this is the first time in years I've seen this episode. I haven't watched the whole series start to finish in a long time, and so it'll be interesting getting to revisit these, and like some of these like season one episodes I don't remember quite as strongly as some of the season two ones. There will be some highs and there will be some lows. I can say that for sure.
I feel like the highs will outweigh the lows, though, just from my memory. Yeah. Okay, so we should come up with a sign-off.
Okay. Well,
that's just prime?
Well, that's just prime. Actually, we should probably say where you can find us on Twitter.
Oh, right. Okay, so you find us on Twitter at Axalon Archives. That's AXALON Archives. One word. We didn't mention it, but that's actually the name of the Maximal ship. The Predacons is called Dark Side with a side with SYDE.
Yeah, with an asterisk, a big old asterisk, which we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Where can you be found on Twitter, though, if you want to follow you?
Oh, yeah, so you can find me at Daofaq, DAOFAQ. When I made it, it was just the first three letters of my first and last name. Then I realized it works on a lot of levels because I'm a wealth of trivia just on a lot of topics. So frequently answering questions is what I make it stand for. Oh, FAQ is all capitalized in the actual writing, but you don't need to capitalize it.
Yeah. And you can find me at Discord_Inc, not affiliated with Discord, the chat program, or My Little Pony. And
you lied to me. You mean you're not voiced by John Delancey? What?
No, sorry.
Anyway. You can also email us at Axalon Art. You can email us at axalonarchives@gmail.com. James and I both have access to both the Twitter and the email, so we'll pretty much be able to see it 24/7 between the two of us. Anything else?
I think that's all. So I think that's it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from us. If anyone has suggestions on how to make the show better, things we could do, we're both. I don't think we did it much this episode, but last time we were both kind of peaking a lot. If that's an issue here, and I didn't notice it when I was editing it, let us know. Like, tell us anything we can do to make it better.
Feedback is appreciated. We're both new, and we're both new to this sort of thing.
Yeah, I take the same approach to podcasting as I do to writing. When I write, not the greatest writer, I'm a fantastic editor. Mm-hmm. So I can tell other people how to do their podcast and make it better. I probably won't have the same ability with ours. Mm-hmm. Like recently, Fistral Wild started saying, like, if you're new here, here's the concept of the show. I told him to do that because I was like, I think I understand the concept of the show. You might want to just tell people, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we're kind of just talking now.
Yeah. But that's just prime.
Yes.
And there we go. Fade out.
We're all going to die.
Yeah.